Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. We want to thank our friends at Elanco for sponsoring this great conversation. Osteoarthritis in dogs, multimodal therapies. Where are we at with diagnosing OA pain in dogs? It's a lot. So we have our wonderful friend and colleague, Dr. Elise Kelly, that's in the house to chat with us further about this. Welcome, Elise.
Thanks, Adam. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks. I'm really interested in learning more about this. But first, we got to learn more about you, Dr. Kelly. So to our listeners, she graduated from Eastern Illinois University with a BS degree in zoology and a minor in chemistry. She earned her DVM degree from Ross University and then practiced in Blue Springs, Missouri for 9 years before joining Elanco in 2015 as a regional consulting veterinarian. In her 9 years of practice, her special interests include dermatology, small exotics, and reproductive medicine, attaining a certification in canine AI in 2012. Since joining Elanco, Dr. Kelly has had the opportunity to train intensively and speak on topics including parasitology, pain management, dermatology, and immunology. She's given over 500 presentations and spoken at CE events, including Kansas City's Frostbite and the annual Missouri Veterinary Medical Association Conference. Dr. Kelly is Fear-Free Elite, Compassion Fatigue, and Human-Animal Bond certified, and she supports and works with Elanco sales representatives throughout the Midwest. She's a member of the Missouri Veterinary Medical Association and is vice chair for the board of directors at the Kansas City Pet Project. And she currently resides in Independence, Missouri with her husband, 2 children, a sheep, a poodle, puppy, cat, and 4 goats. In her spare time, you might find her cheering for Kansas City Chiefs, boating, hiking, and traveling with her family. Okay, I need to know about the animal situation here. Does everyone get along? How does this work?
For the most part, they all get along. The dog, I think probably, the goats aren't huge fans of the sheepadoodle. He tries to herd them, of course, as you can imagine, and they're not too fond of that, but you know, it's a good situation.
Yeah. Well, you got your hands full there. Well, thank you for all the great work that you do in our profession. I love it. All right. So OA pain in dogs. Let's kind of start first by talking about some of the important signs of OA pain in dogs, and are they consistent in all dogs with OA?
Yeah, that's a great question. No, they're not consistent in all dogs with OA. And we know, you know, from an owner perspective, oftentimes they're going to tell us that their dogs may be kind of lagging behind on walks or hesitant to go up and down stairs, jump in bed, jump up in their vehicles, maybe not enjoy their favorite activities like they used to. One thing that I think a lot of times pet owners and vets alike don't think about is sleep. Sometimes dogs, when they're very restless at night or they can't lay down and get comfortable, that can be a sign of pain and osteoarthritis as well. But it can present differently in all different types of dogs. And as veterinarians, when we're doing our physical exam, of course, we're looking for things like changes in range of motion, crepitus in the joint, swelling, inflammation, any pain when we manipulate that joint. But again, every dog is a little bit different. And I think it's important to understand also here that we tend to think about osteoarthritis as an old age dog disease. And it's really not. It's really a young dog disease. And I don't know about you, Adam, but youngest dog I ever diagnosed with osteoarthritis was a 9-month-old Boston Terrier who had awful hip dysplasia. And so it's really a developmental disease for these dogs. And sadly, most of them aren't diagnosed until they're between 8 and 13. So one of my pleas for veterinarians today is to be really vigilant about asking these questions to pet owners, to look for these specific changes we talked about at home earlier on, even maybe starting at 2 or 3 years of age. So if we can catch osteoarthritis earlier and start treating earlier, it's just going to be better long-term quality of life for that pet and the pet parent.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're talking about these stages of OA. So I know we can treat all stages of OA. And what does that strategy look like for management and when you would want to start, say, some of those treatments?
Yeah, wonderful question. So when we look at the COAST, which is the Canine Osteoarthritis Staging Tool, there are four different stages to osteoarthritis. Zero and one are really what we call the preclinical stages. So dogs really aren't showing any signs or symptoms of osteoarthritis yet. It's really at stage two when we start to see the clinical signs of pain manifest. And that's really when we want to start thinking about treatment. And treatment, in my mind, has a kind of a trifold or a triangular section. So we want to first think about starting omega fatty acids. So a supplement with DHA and EPA, at least at a minimum dose of 100 mg per kg per day. Then the second pharmaceutical we want to talk about is an NSAID like Galliprant. And Galliprant is approved for dogs as young as 9 months of age, because you might need it for those young dogs, and 8 pounds of body weight and older. And the important thing here, and you're going to hear me say this probably several times today because it is really important, the newer treatment guidelines from our pain management specialists are when we start an NSAID at stage two, 1 to 3 months minimum duration. That's not what I was taught in vet school, probably not what you were taught in vet school either, but that's the new guidelines. And we'll talk a little bit more kind of about why probably later on here. And then the third set of that kind of triangle is going to be the exercise and weight management. So making sure that dogs have the goal is at least 20 to 60 minutes of controlled leash walking per day, because if they're painful, we don't want them kind of just running out willy-nilly and injuring themselves all over again. So we want to do controlled leash walks, weight management, things like underwater treadmills, if a pet owner has access to that, and swimming can be really great as well.
And there's so many great exercises now that you see on social media that from physical therapists that are showing you great exercises, because some dogs are so obese that just to start moving a little bit first and then getting them a little bit more active with walking and swimming or whatnot. I think it's great that I'm seeing a lot more of that now than ever because we're seeing that correlation between obesity and osteoarthritis. So that's a
Absolutely.
great part of that triangle that you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of the, when we talk about the stages of osteoarthritis, the co-stages, it's one of those kind of preclinical things that we look at in stage one. So is the dog overweight? Have they had prior joint injury before? Those sorts of things we know. It's not a matter of if they're going to develop osteoarthritis. It's a matter of when they're going to develop it.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do a little bit of a deeper dive on NSAID use. You were talking about a stage two OA with osteoarthritis. So beyond things like staying active, managing weight, considering the supplements like the omega-3s, fatty acids, when would you recommend starting NSAID therapy, and what are those dosing recommendations looking like?
Yeah, again, you're going to hear me say it many times throughout this podcast today, because I do think it's really important. Stage two, when the dog first starts to exhibit some pain, some clinical symptoms that the owner is telling you. And again, that can be, as young as 9 months old. It could be when the dog's maybe 12 or 13. So it's never too young to start asking those questions to the pet owner to kind of get a better understanding, is this dog in pain and should I start NSAID therapy? So again, stage two, when the dog has clinical signs of pain, is when you're going to start that NSAID therapy like Galliprant. And again, it's going to be a minimum duration of 1 to 3 months. And that's really important, because if you think about what's going on in the joint kind of earlier on when that dog is starting to become painful, it's like a fire within the joint, right? And if we just use kind of PRN treatment or really, really short-term duration, 1 to 2 weeks, like maybe we've done before, it's sort of like just, taking a house fire and putting a fire extinguisher to it. You're going to eliminate the flames that are there, but it's going to smolder. It's going to continue to burn, and you're going to have reactivation of that fire, just like you're going to have reactivation of that pain and inflammation in the joint. So that's really where that kind of new recommendation of 1 to 3 months of therapy comes in, is we really want to squash that pain and inflammation, just like we're squashing that fire, to control and hopefully slow down the progression of that osteoarthritis.
Yeah, fascinating. And what is it about Galliprant specifically in terms of its, we love mechanism of action, we love learning about it, so the mode of action. So what is it about that that makes it different from, say, other NSAIDs that are out there, and why would you recommend as a first line for treating canine OA?
I'm glad you asked that question. So I love Galliprant. My old dog I had before I have my Sheepadoodle now was on Galliprant for the last several months of his life, which I really think helped kind of with with quality of life in that time he had left. And so I have firsthand experience with it. And it has a very unique mechanism of action. So I like to call Galliprant a non-traditional NSAID. It is an NSAID, but it works much differently like our traditional NSAIDs that we have on the market. And I'm going to give you an analogy if that's okay, because sometimes I
Yes.
think the analogies tell a better story. So for my maybe Midwesterners or hopefully anybody that is familiar with like having crops and fields where you live or if you've driven by those before, when you think about, we're going to think about osteoarthritis management, how we think about weed control in crops. And so there's three different ways you can manage weeds. You can have one of those big crop duster planes that's going to fly over and it's going to do a great job, right? It's going to do the weed control. It's also going to land on your crops and it's probably going to overspray onto some trees. That's kind of like using a steroid when we treat osteoarthritis. Does a really effective job, but you're going to have some overkill. Then you can have those sprayer machines that you see on the ground, and they're going to do a little bit more of a targeted weed control, but they're still going to affect your crops. And that's like using a traditional NSAID like Carprofen or Deramax, for example. When we come to Galliprant, then you have those handheld little sprayers where you can take the nozzle and actually point directly at the weed that you want to kill or target. That would be like using Galliprant in the joint. So it is a targeted receptor action drug that specifically targets the EP4 receptor of prostaglandin E2 alpha. That was a mouthful, but essentially that's how it works, is you get to pinpoint and target the specific a receptor that we know is primarily involved in joint pain and inflammation as well. So by targeting that receptor, it helps to decrease the effect on the other prostanoids, other prostaglandins, therefore leaving alone some of those really effective kind of homeostatic processes that we need to be maintained in the dog and having a lesser impact on the dog's overall organ health.
Right. And when you first diagnose a dog with experiencing signs related to OA and start them on Galliprant, what are those dosing recommendations?
Yeah, so Galliprant is going to be a once-a-day drug, which can be a little bit more convenient for some pet owners. Again, I'm going to say this. I think this is the third time. I'll probably repeat it again, making sure that you kind of are following the new guidelines for dosing any kind of NSAID, whether it's Galliprant or another NSAID. A minimum daily dosing of 1 to 3 months to start to really kind of squash that fire in the joint and help control that inflammation and pain. And then if you're going to reassess the dog. So in about a month or so, have the dog back for a recheck, see how the dog's doing. How are they responding to the Galliprant or to the NSAID? And then see if you can take them off of the drug, maintain them on other modalities, or decrease the dose, decrease the duration of the dose at that time period. At some point, if they do need to go on long-term therapy, then like any long-term medication, I would highly recommend doing regular annual or every 6 month blood monitoring with Galliprant, just to, especially as dogs age, to make sure that you're catching any kind of concurrent disease processes as well.
Yeah, excellent. And let's talk about the lifelong nature of osteoarthritis, because there's a cycle of pain and inflammation. And I think a lot of pet owners out there like to give an NSAID on an as-needed basis. So, but for long-term management of OA, and I know we talked about that, 1 to 3 months, what do you want veterinarians and pet owners to understand about dosing NSAIDs like Galliprant consistently versus that as-needed basis?
Yeah, this is really important, and I'm glad you brought this up because I think part of that is our fault, right? That PRN
Yes.
dosing is our fault. As veterinarians, that's what we have recommended. And again, it's probably because that's what we learned in vet school and that's how we started practicing medicine. But the dosing recommendations have changed, especially for long term. And when a dog starts to advance in that COAST stage, when they get to stage three, which is moderate osteoarthritis, and then stage four, which is severe osteoarthritis, they're absolutely going to be in more continuous pain. And I like to always quote Dr. Duncan Lascelles here. I think, he's one of the kind of the best minds in pain management control and veterinary medicine. And he likes to describe the cycle of osteoarthritis like a wave. And so you're going to have peaks, you're going to have troughs, right? You're going to have good days, you're going to have bad days. You're going to have days where the dog goes out and runs a lot and is more painful, and then days when the dog is feeling a little bit better. And if we're only kind of PRN dosing, then we're not going to do a very effective job at managing those peaks and troughs or that wave. If we are consistently administering a daily NSAID like Galliprant, then that wave is going to go from here, right? That huge ocean wave to maybe just a gentle kind of wave that that dog is experiencing. So it's just better pain control for the dog. It's better quality of life. And I think anything we can do, I'm human animal bond certified, as you mentioned earlier. And so when our patients, when our own pets are peaceful and comfortable, and they have a good quality of life, and they're sleeping better at night, that's good for the dog, but it's also great for the pet owner as well. So that long-term dosing can really help improve quality of life, not just for the dog, but for the pet parent.
And you bring up a really good point too, because dogs are pretty good at masking signs of pain. And I think that's where that gap can happen, in the treatment of pain. Like, oh, they're not in pain. And then what the what if factor, what if it's too late where they're not being consistent with giving Galliprant, for instance? So have you, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I completely agree. And pet owners aren't always the most sensitive to noticing that, right? Some may be, but some may not be. And if the dog has consistently been in pain and they're not noticing like a drastic change, then they may not understand the best time to be administering that pain medication as well. And like I said, there's just kind of that wave, that roller coaster, of pain and inflammation that dogs cycle through, especially as that disease process gets a little bit further down the road and they get to that stage three and stage four of osteoarthritis. So, yeah, absolutely. That's another great point to why we should not be, as veterinarians, recommending PRN pain medication for the moderate and severe stages of OA. We really should be recommending daily medication.
And what would you say to veterinarians who are reserved about Galliprant for older dogs that can't tolerate, say, more traditional nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories?
Yeah, this is, I talk about this all the time because I hear this from veterinarians all the time about Galliprant. It's like, oh, I love Galliprant and I only use it for my old, sick, dying, train wreck dog cases. That's great. I think it's good that you're using it for those cases, right? Those dogs need something, and Galliprant can be a really safe option for them. So I think that's fantastic. But the thing I would urge veterinarians to think about is, don't forget to use it for the younger dogs as well. Like I said, if you diagnose a dog like I did at 9 months of age with horrific hip dysplasia, you know this dog is going to need an NSAID continuously, maybe not right now, right? Like that dog, we did some weight management control, we did some nutrition control, some omega fatty acids, and got that dog really stabilized. But at some point, again, it's not a if that dog gets OA, it's a when that dog really has chronic OA. And so they're going to really benefit, especially in a younger patient, if they're going to need an NSAID for a long-term time, then why not use a drug like Galliprant that has a really demonstrated amazing safety profile? And just to give you an example of that safety profile, because some people are like, I don't, why is it so, like, why is the safety profile so good? When we did clinical trials, we dosed this drug at 15 times the daily dose to dogs, and we did it every day for 9 months straight. And just think about if you were to do that with any other NSAID on the market. Just think about that for a second. We did that with Galliprant, and every single dog lived. They had some vomiting, they had some diarrhea, they had some things you would expect to see with 15 times overdoses, right? But every single dog lived, and there really were no major consequences from that. They had healthy livers, they had healthy kidneys, they had healthy GI tracts after that. So that's what I mean by the safety profile. And if a dog's going to be on long term and you're going to diagnose them early, why not think about using Galliprant since it does have a great demonstrated safety profile?
Excellent, excellent. And as we're wrapping up, what are some precautions that we should be mindful of when using Galliprant?
Yeah, that's a great question, Adam. So With any long-term duration drug, you always want to do some blood work. I always recommend a CBC and a chemistry, making sure, and a urinalysis is always a great idea as well, making sure that the dog doesn't have any concomitant illnesses that we're dealing with, thinking about other medications that we're administering at the same time, and are there any, precautions to using those drugs together. So doing, if a dog is going to be on long-term Galliprant, making sure that the dog does have blood work at least every 6 months to a year. Although we don't have specific parameters for that on the label, just I generally think it's a good idea for any long-term medication. Now, having said that, you mentioned earlier how people like to use Galliprant, reserve it for their old dogs. We haven't specifically tested Galliprant for any kind of geriatric related diseases. So we don't have specific data on dogs with concurrent urinary disease or liver disease. Anything like that at all. So just always think about those things when you are prescribing any long-term medication. What other drugs is the dog taking? What other disease processes does the dog have? And how frequently should I be looking at some lab work?
Excellent. Excellent conversation, Dr. Elise Kelly. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Adam. It was wonderful to talk with you and your listeners today.
Well, that's why we call it the Vet Blast Podcast. You know it. Nope. And also, we want to thank Elanco for sponsoring this great conversation. And thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to rate the podcast as we continue to grow. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast Podcast. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast Podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.